said the same thing, that, you know, constitutional error occurred here and we shouldn't execute him. And so for those same reasons, the court should hear this case.
Trisha
as well.
Rojo Bushnell, executive director of the Midwest Innocence Project, the prosecutor, the jurors, and the victim's family have called for him not to be executed. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bansoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. And also the internet. Don't forget the internet. WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock. Time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, this autumnal Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yo.
And, yeah, it's autumn. How about that? It's no more summer. And that's just fine with me. I honestly don't care. It's bringing us one day closer to D-Day. That's what you have to call Election Day these days. Yeah, it's 42 days or 41 days now from today, which means, let me do some mathematics in my head, 6 weeks, right? 6 weeks from today. Oh, boy. I got to say, I'm despondent. I'm not having fun here because I keep, everywhere I look, I'm seeing negativity, you know, despite all the positivity of a couple of weeks ago. Now I'm seeing negative. Okay, example, a poll in Arizona, pre-debate, post-debate. Post-debate, Trump moves ahead by 5 points. How is that even possible? How does somebody witness that debate and say, yeah, that's my guy, and pour even more energy into it? It makes absolutely no sense. I keep hearing how Trump is being trusted more for the economy. When, you know, are we completely rewriting history? Because things weren't that great when he was in office, and anything that was positive, it wasn't because of his actions. All right, and you know, you're talking about high prices. Well, you know, that's all around the world, and that's something that you can't blame the current administration solely for that. You just can't. Whereas you have somebody who is saying all kinds of unhinged things, all kinds of racist things, all kinds of sexist things, all kinds of horrible, ignorant, you know, ridiculous lies that get peddled. You know, I had him on the other, well, actually today, he's on every day, but I was just watching him at a rally and just basically throwing out lies, just complete lies. Yeah, he wiped the floor with Kamala because he refuses to pronounce her name right, and he won that debate decisively. It's even Republicans, even Fox News, said he had an awful night. But now history is being rewritten to say he had a good night. And people are starting to believe it. Because if you keep repeating something over and over again, people start to believe it. They believe, oh, it was the heyday of all time when Trump was in office. Everybody was having a great time. It was terrible. It was awful. You didn't know what was going to happen from one day to the next. My taxes went up. I don't know about yours, but I sure didn't benefit from any tax cut for the rich. I wound up paying more. I wound up losing certain benefits. A lot of people did. So let's not rewrite history and say things were good when they weren't good. Let's not attribute blame to things that, or people that don't deserve it. Kamala Harris is not responsible for every bit of immigration that is not authorized. I mean, that is insane. There was a deal on the table, and Trump instructed his lackeys to basically blow it up. It gave them virtually everything they were asking for. But solving the problem is not what he wants to do. He wants to make things as bad as possible now so that he can say he'll make it better. Anything he can do to screw up someone else's efforts, or even his own party's efforts, he will do. So it's just really frustrating to hear that people are actually buying into this, and that based on nothing, he's moving up in the polls. Makes no sense. Of course, I don't really believe in polls. I know it's, you know, trendy to say that, but it's just inconceivable to me that this is even something we're talking about as a possibility. Because can you imagine this guy getting into the White House a second time? Can you imagine? We've been warned. We've been warned by his own vice president. We've been warned by Dick Cheney. You know, these are not people that I have respect for, that I agree with on virtually anything. But you do have to take note when people who are so close to him and so allied with what he allegedly stood for, when they're the ones warning you not to vote for him, it's got to mean something. It's got to mean something. Look, you get rid of the direction that we are heading right now. Say goodbye to the stimulus. Say goodbye to the infrastructure. Say goodbye to high-speed rail. All the things that are being developed right now. I don't think there's a part of this country you can go to and not notice the difference. Projects being built, even completed. It's, you know, I know we're loath to say this, but it's progress. Things are getting done. You know, prescription prices going down. I hear people complaining about gas prices. My God. Gas prices are $2 and change around here. That's what they were 10 years ago. What are you complaining about? Yeah, I know there are some places where it's more expensive, but, you know, they probably were more expensive back then as well. It just feels like we're looking for something to excuse what is probably the biggest threat to democracy that we have experienced. And I know one side gets accused of using that as a label, threat to democracy, but the other side does it as well. Yeah, they say Kamala Harris is a threat to democracy, which is absurd because it's not backed up by any actual facts. You might not like the direction that she's going in, you might not like the things that she supports, but that's not the destruction of democracy. That's simply having a different party run things for a while. Lord knows I've experienced that many, many times. But in Trump's case, he has said he wants to be a dictator. He has said he will abolish the Department of Education. He will take us out of NATO. If Trump gets into power, there will be no Ukraine. How could there be? He's allied with Vladimir Putin. We all know this. And he will allow Putin to take whatever he wants. And Putin wants Ukraine. So goodbye to that country. Goodbye to that effort. It's just... It's too much to handle. It really is.
He'd be the first to say that the polls were, quote, rigged.
Well, and, he's saying that now.
I think there is a lot of, difficulty taking some of that seriously. And, you know, you have to put it in perspective as far as that statistic and that statistical analysis or those results in general. But the other thing is the media, I guess rightly, but more traditionally, as per tradition, is amplifying both of the parties in our bicameral politics. So the sentiment, and we don't know, there's a lot of attention to people on the fence or in the middle or undecideds, whatever you want to call it, but they're going to show what is recognized, as you said, many from that party have testified and said, hey, this is not a good direction for us. That is not the preponderance necessarily, but in the way the media is calling the race, there's so much competitive jargon, but the race has to have one and the other side. So if it's quite radical or quite anathema to what their party has stood for traditionally, then it's going to seem as though that is a more valid or excited sentiment, when it may actually be quite depressed for the broader membership. However, that amplification and the coverage is sort of, I don't know, could be something that makes people compelled to give it credence when it's probably not worthy of it.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if, the media is hyping this because, you know, keeping us engaged, keeping us just glued to the TV set or you know, reading the tabloid headlines. Obviously, that's what they want. But, I cling to the hope that perhaps this is being given more attention than it deserves and that we're not talking about reality here. But, you know, I lived through 2016. I know how it can go. And I know how messed up our system is where, you know, even the popular vote doesn't count. If you win the electoral vote, it's absurd. And that could happen again. That could happen again. He could lose by more than he did the first or second time and still win. That is possible.
Well, and I mean, even if it went swimmingly and they conceded and went,
I'm sorry, thank you for
went
that.
About their business, uh-huh. the kinds of log jams and sabotage, I'd say, outright. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's going a little far, but I think that there's an unwillingness to make a presidency work if it's not to your liking these days from what I've seen of how that's gone. I don't know. I just think that if they don't get their way, it's like a scorched earth kind of thing, you know. They've had that tactic in the Senate. It's why so many. It's pretty much the answer to quite a few of the points and the critiques of the current administration and a lot of those solutions that you were listing off. Why some of that has taken longer, or why it's been hamstrung in one way or the other. ACA is a great example over time. For that, I mean, this is all stuff that's been talked over and over and over and over again. I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, there really isn't much else. There is some good news, though. The people with integrity. I don't know if you heard about what was happening in Nebraska, but they're having a battle there over changing the way their electoral college system works. They're one of the few states. In fact, I think there's only two states. I think Maine is the only other one. That basically don't award all of the electoral votes to just one candidate. It's based on each district, I believe. But yesterday, a Nebraska Republican state lawmaker said that he remains opposed to switching how the state allocates its electoral votes, which effectively blocked a bid by Trump and his allies to change the system in a bid for an extra electoral vote this fall. Yeah, it's only one vote, but it could be a very pivotal vote. Trump allies have pushed for a special legislative session intended for the Republican-controlled legislature to change Nebraska to a winner-take-all system instead of awarding electoral votes by congressional district. Now, State Senator Mike McDonnell says, after deep consideration, it is clear to me that right now, 43 days from Election Day, is not the moment to make this change. And that is integrity right there. Now, GOP State Senator Lauren Lippincott sponsored the bill to move the state to a winner-take-all system. And he basically threatened a special session to basically override what McDonnell is saying here. Because without McDonnell's vote, they can't do this. Yeah. Now, that all came to a head today, actually. McDonnell made a statement yesterday. Today, the governor weighed in, and these are all Republicans. These are all Republicans. Nebraska GOP Governor Jim Pillen announced today he will not call a special legislative session to change how the state allocates its electoral votes. And that pretty much dashes Republican hopes that the switch could happen before November. Yeah, Trump and his allies, again, they've been pushing state lawmakers to switch to that system in which the presidential candidate who carries the state receives all five of its electoral votes. Currently, three of the state's votes are awarded to the candidate who wins each of its three congressional districts. I got confused by that. But basically what it boils down to is Omaha is basically blue, and the rest of the state is red. So Omaha generally will have one electoral vote for the Democratic candidate. Now, interesting statement from the governor here. He said, unfortunately, we could not persuade 33 state senators, noting that GOP State Senator Mike McDonnell, who, by the way, is a former Democrat, confirmed yesterday he could not support the move so close to Election Day. Here's what the governor said. That is profoundly disappointing to me and the many others who have worked so earnestly to ensure all Nebraskans' votes are sought after equally this election. Now, just analyze that statement for a second. What is he saying here? Worked so earnestly to ensure all Nebraskans' votes are sought after equally this election. We're talking about making only one side count and everybody else canceled. Means nothing. Disappointed that that didn't happen. Look, at least he's not calling a special session, which he could have done. But he said, based on the lack of 33 votes, I have no plans to call a special session on the issue prior to the 2024 election. I am grateful to the many Nebraskans who made their voices heard during the process. Yeah, so that came razor thin close. It really did. In 2020, Biden won the Omaha-based 2nd District, defeating Trump by 7 points and notching the district's electoral vote. That one vote could be crucial in a close election, prompting Trump and his allies to push for that shift to winner take all. That's kind of fighting that's going on right now, you know, our crazy system, manipulating it in all sorts of weird ways.
Well, it is somewhat satisfying to me that their, like, brazenness is itself sapping energy from other areas that they could be trying this sort of, like, let's throw everything at it frenzy of kind of just cynical politics, cynical tactics.
Mm-hmm. All right, enough about that. Hey, I'm still taking my driving class, my online driver safety class that gives me a discount in insurance. And, you know, I forgot about it, actually, for 2 weeks, and I have to catch up. But it's a weird system. You know, in New York here, you can do this online. I remember the first couple of times I had to go to a class and actually attend class for 6 hours, not all at once, 3 hours one day, 3 hours next. This is weird. I got pulled over by a cop once because I was late for the class and I was speeding. I didn't get a ticket. I got a warning, but it was kind of ironic, and I didn't mention it in class. But now you can do the whole thing online and not worry about any of that. Do you know the ways that they verify that you're who you are? Because, you know, you can walk away and have somebody else just take over for you and not take class at all. You have to basically pass a number of tests, one of which is a voice test. Occasionally, you get a little prompt on the screen that says, okay, you have 45 seconds to say this phrase in your voice. And then I always get an error because I don't have a microphone attached to my computer, so that's a problem. So instead, I get a QR code, which I have to hold my smartphone up for, and I don't know what happened if I didn't have a smartphone. And then when I click on that, I go to a website, and the website tells me, okay, say this phrase. The phrase is always the same. It's always, my voice is stronger than passwords. You know, it's like they're piping in some kind of propaganda into your brain that this is better than using a password just to use your voice. You have to say that within a certain amount of time, and it has to match your voice. And if it doesn't, I don't know what happens. You know, a number of failures, you wind up having to pay again and start over from scratch. But the other thing, and this happens more frequently, they made me answer between 30 and 40 questions. Just random questions. What is your preferred breakfast food? What color is your hair? What was the first instrument you learned to play? What type of music do you enjoy most? What type of vehicle do you drive? How do you get to work or school? You know, I answered every single one of these questions.
I thought to myself, you know what? I lied on a lot of these because you can do that. You don't have to tell the truth. Yeah, I told him I have red hair. I don't have red hair. Yeah. So luckily I printed it out and, you know, it came to like 6 pages, but occasionally it asks me to verify something and I have to rifle through these pages and then look for the mark that's not there.
I hear you rifling.
Yeah, I'm rifling right now.
Yeah, it's quite audible.
What is your favorite flavor of ice cream? My God, do you think I can answer that twice in the same way? Vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, mint, or rocky road? What do you think my answer was?
Strawberry?
No. It was mint. And the only way I can tell you that, because it's really not mint, the only way I can tell you that is by looking at where a little checkbox, which you can barely see, didn't print out. And, it's very stressful because you've got to find the question, and you got to see that little tiny shaded box that isn't there, and you have to answer all within 45 seconds or you get in trouble.
You know, I'm getting stressed out just hearing you recount this.
Yeah. Which topic do you find most interesting? Current events, history, nature and science, art and design, entertainment and pop culture. I said current events, and I guess that's probably true. Yeah. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing. But there's one thing I wanted to bounce off of you, Kyle. This was one of the last module that I attended. Had to do with driving while impaired, driving while intoxicated, all that stuff. Driving while ability impaired, that's DWAI. Driving, it's a combination, okay. And, of course, driving while intoxicated, that's DWI. All right, so in New York State, at least, DWI is driving while intoxicated by alcohol, and pay attention to this, with blood alcohol content of 0.08 or higher, or there are evidence of intoxication. Now, of course, you can get pulled over for that and get in a lot of trouble. But the category below that is driving while ability impaired, and that's with a blood alcohol content between 0.05 and 0.07. Do you see a problem with this?
There's like a gap?
There's a gap. You got it right away. Yes.
What was the other end of
okay,
it? The low end?
0.08. And the
right.
other one is between 0.05 and 0.07. And they say this a million times in the class. And I keep asking, what about between 0.07 and 0.08? Is that nothing? Is that just a free zone? What do you do? And how do you tell anybody? You know, at least if I was in a class, I could say, hey, teach, you know, because that's how you talk to them. There's a problem here. It probably would have been ignored, but that's significant. I wonder if all of New York State has this gap.
Is that, like, just right? Because they're sending an interesting message.
We're not,
that's the case.
We're not advising people go out and get drunk only to the point of between 0.07 and 0.08, and you'll be fine. No,
you're
saying.
You're not good to go.
In fact, what we're trying to do is make it so that they don't say that, which it seems like they're saying. So all kinds of little things like that.
Cut yourself off, not driving from drinking, mm-hmm. and ask for someone to drive you home.
Yeah, or get a taxi, or spend the night in the bar, or walk home.
Yeah, you could leave your car if it's decent parking.
Or
forget
go to the
about
bathroom and puke all the alcohol back into the toilet.
Okay.
That wasn't one of them, and I don't think that even works.
No, time. It's all about time.
It is. They say that. They say the only thing. They say coffee. That's nonsense.
Nope.
All the other things, being in a bath or a whole lot of
just,
supposed remedies.
Just
and
if you're going to be drinking, do not include driving in your plans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plan to not drive or not have to, or have plans for the transportation.
Have a designated driver,
yep.
who you all make fun of for not drinking, and then he's the one who saves your lives. And that's basically it. All right. Here's another story I wanted to bounce off of you, Kyle. Has to do with something going on here on Long Island. Half Hollow Hills School District, which I'm embarrassed to say I forgot where that is on the island. Dix Hills. Okay. So apparently when you go to high school and you drive your car and you're a class officer, whatever that is, guess, school president or class president or treasurer or whatever they do in high school, you get your own parking space. You get a parking space assigned to you, and you're allowed to paint that parking space. Yeah. I mean, that's extra. That's not something you get when you have a parking space at a parking garage or, you know, even at work. I don't think you can paint it. Well, this has resulted in controversy because a particular painting has been removed. The female student who belonged to that space painted a watermelon along with some Arabic writing and a message saying, "Peace be upon you." And that was too much for the people of Long Island, apparently. The image of a watermelon has become an increasingly seen symbol of solidarity with Palestinians as the Israel-Hamas war continues. So now, being seen with a watermelon, that's anti-Semitic. This is getting ridiculous. The watermelon has the colors, in case you don't realize why. Red, white, and green of the Palestinian flag, and that's all it takes. After some people complained about the painting, the district painted over the image of the watermelon last week. The issue came to a head during last Monday night's school board meeting, attended by a few hundred people. Several residents said removing the watermelon image from the lot at the Dix Hill School was a violation of the students' right to free speech and an insult to Muslims. But others supported the administration's action, saying the image was offensive to Jewish people, asserting that it conveys a message against Israel. My God, when is this going to stop? When is this going to stop? You can be against Israel. You can be against what they are doing. You can be against their awful policies. Their murderous rampages into other lands. We'll get to that in a second. Superintendent Patrick Harrigan said the district needs to maintain neutrality regarding controversial political matters. Doesn't sound like you did a good job with that, if you painted over the image there. He continued, an image painted on school property could be interpreted as a political statement supported by the district. Yeah, you know what, Patrick? Anything could be interpreted in one way or another. But when you're interpreting watermelons, you've gone way too far. An Arabic statement, peace be upon you? How is that offensive? What exactly is offensive here? We're not supposed to even acknowledge the existence of Palestinians? We can't show their colors? We can't wish for peace? Because the maniacs who are murdering children over there think that critique is harmful to them? Give me a break. Oh, I want to say so much more. The female student who was Muslim did not face any disciplinary action. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Master, for that. Newsday is not identifying the student, this is from a Newsday article, or her family because of the sensitivity and tensions surrounding the war, and because we all know she'd be targeted by all the ignorant idiots. The superintendent said, I do not believe there was any hate on her part. Symbols can be interpreted differently by different people. Yeah, they can be. And I can point to 1,000 symbols that can be interpreted in ways you never imagined. And you would have to remove every one of them by your own logic. The school district does not have a specific policy on what can be painted in the parking spots, but district officials pointed to its existing policy on student expression, which states, students' expression, which either is forecasted to cause or actually causes a substantial disruption and or which materially interferes with school activities or rights of others, is not constitutionally protected speech. Well, first of all, your little school policy pamphlet there doesn't get to interpret what constitutionally protected speech is. But a painting of a watermelon, that's going to cause a substantial disruption? I think that the substantial disruption is going on in your frontal lobe, and you need to have it checked out. It's problematic, to say the least. In the past, and get this, in the past, paintings on parking spots have included flags of countries, multicolored hearts, and smiley face emoji, officials said. The officials are saying this. Flags of countries. This isn't even a flag. This is a watermelon. And it's too much for them because it has the same colors. I mean, are Palestinians human? Maybe that's what I'm not getting here, because they're not being treated as if they are. And I'd like to get some clarification on that. It would make a whole lot of sense, you know, not caring that they're being obliterated, not caring that entire families are being wiped out, not caring that they have absolutely no infrastructure, and nobody in the world seems to care about them. And we're talking about people who never hurt anybody. Yeah, if they're not human, I guess we can sort of excuse that. I do feel sorry. You know, when I step on a bug, I feel sorry. So even that, I have to say, that's a bit harsh. Wael Hussein, a parent in the district, praised the student's painting as a nonviolent message of peace and solidarity. He asserted that the administration's removal of it was an infringement of the student's right to free expression and discriminatory against Muslims. This was not a case of a student engaging in harmful or violent expression, he said, at the meeting. The student's father said his daughter was emotionally distraught after administrators painted over the image. He said school officials owe her a public apology, at the very least. We stand for peace, he said, to great applause, adding that he was proud of his daughter. Never let it be said there aren't good people. There are lots of good people. I'm just frustrated at all the idiots, because I guess they talk louder. The student herself rose to speak, saying she felt humiliated. I stand here today to express my deep disappointment and betrayal of this school district. She said she would never discriminate against anyone because of their religion. She received a standing ovation by many. Haya Beg, 19 years old, former district student, addressed the school board, said the student took a stand for something she knows to be right, and we are here with her in solidarity, and you are on the other side. To that I say shame. Bravo. Several people spoke in support of the district removing the watermelon image, saying that since the attack by Hamas on Israel on October 7th, the image has become increasingly controversial and has political dimensions that speak against Israel. If I buy a watermelon in a supermarket, is that okay? Am I going to be looked upon in a weird way? I guess if I buy a whole watermelon, you don't see the red, you don't see the black. So avoid buying watermelon halves or quarters. That could offend some people. It is a red flag, said David Rosenberg, who has two children who graduated from the school system. It is deliberately provocative and it is inflammatory. Why doesn't the student apologize? Oh, you moron. I'm sorry. I can't hold back on this. Why doesn't the student apologize for painting a watermelon on a parking space? For standing up for the Palestinians, for wishing peace upon... You know what? You don't deserve peace. You don't deserve peace. You don't understand what it is. You want conflict. You want domination. Watermelons are deliberately provocative. His remarks were met with shouts of support and opposition, at which point Board President Diana A. Campora said to all, "Kindly mind your manners." The district also received a letter submitted jointly by two local leaders of the Jewish community, Rabbi Howard Buchler of the Dix Hills Jewish Center and Rabbi Susie Hennison Moskowitz of Temple Beth Torah in Melville. Together, these institutions represent some 1,300 local families, the rabbi said. There are symbols, such as the watermelon, that have become politicized. I can't read this with a straight face. Give me a second. There are symbols, such as the watermelon, that have become politicized and infused and supercharged with a meaning that is...
Just gather yourself. Just get control. It's okay.
My God, it's so crazy.
No, just take it from... Just
what is wrong
over.
With this world?
Breathe. You okay?
I got to read the whole sentence. I can't break it up like this. By the way, I don't have coffee tonight, which is would have saved me probably, but I'm not having coffee because I wanted those palpitations to stop, and they have, and I think caffeine was the cause. Yeah, so. All right, that was just an allusion there, a little interlude. Okay, there are symbols such as the watermelon that have become politicized and infused and supercharged with a meaning that is hateful, divisive, and offensive, said the letter. The letter continued. Oh, no. Damn it. The intent of this symbol is to have advocates of geopolitical forces negate the sovereign country of Israel. Is watermelon offensive to Israelis? Really? Do people not have watermelon there ever? In a school setting, this often leads to others confronting not only Israeli-born students, but demonstrating anger and resentment against Jewish students. Show me one instance. I'm seeing a whole bunch of ignorant people, adults, getting all bent out of shape over this. Students seem to be handling it. Amy Rosens Tuckman Davidson, who took a lot of names there, of Melville, has two children, graduated from the system, said the watermelon symbol offends Jewish people. No, it doesn't offend all Jewish people. I can guarantee you that. I think we need to have more dialogue between the groups and understanding to what they're feeling in the situation and how the other side is feeling. Yeah, maybe that'll happen. It's not going to happen if you shut people up, and that's what you're doing here. Hey, what would happen? Just, you know, putting this out there. If somebody painted the Star of David on a parking space and it got painted over, what would you call that? What would you call that? It would be on the news everywhere. And nobody that I have any respect for would accept that. So, I said I wanted to bounce that off of you, Kyle. It was basically, I didn't mean to read the whole story, but it got kind of intriguing. But this is silly, right? I mean, this is probably the dumbest thing I think I can imagine people getting upset over. A watermelon painted on a parking space.
Well, there's always a new example going forward, but I just react thinking, like, if you do not allow various forms of protest or peaceful symbols to emerge in solidarity with movements that have real, I don't know, real validity, I don't know what you leave the populace that's suffering and that's identifying with that suffering, what you leave them with, but I don't know, more frustration and less, I think, outlets for expressing that and sharing the support. Mm-hmm. It's been very helpful with other campaigns, specifically I'm thinking Ukraine, you know, like there's a lot of that symbolism that is, you know, maybe not everyone is displaying it, but when you see stuff like that, it helps. And that, I mean, it goes across multiple types of issues, domestic and otherwise. And if we're to be a society that allows for varied opinions and stuff like that, I think immediately, I guess labeling or categorizing symbols like this as something hateful is, I think, a reactionary type thing. And it's certainly a display of cowardice from some of these institutions. There are many other symbols that are hateful that coincide with this or other, ideologies, but, I don't think that they all compare in the same way.
It's basically, it stifles expression, which is what we need now more than ever when something horrible is going on in the world, and there are plenty of horrible things going on. You need to talk it out. You need to hear the other side. You need to come up with ideas and compromises. You know, there was an interesting story that came out in today's Times about anti-Semitism at City University of New York. CUNY campuses, you may know, have been a center of pro-Palestinian activism, and it's been controversial lately. The review was commissioned by Kathy Hochul last October after a surge in hate and bias incidents. It was released today. It documented inconsistencies, a lack of oversight on how CUNY's 25 campuses handle complaints of anti-Semitism and other bias among students and staff members. But the review, which includes interviews with more than 200 people over 10 months, also found it was a small vocal minority of individuals responsible for anti-Semitic incidents and not a widespread problem. Yeah. The vast majority of students and members of the CUNY community do not engage in anti-Semitism or discrimination of any kind and instead want only to access the quality education CUNY affords. Okay, some PR there. But basically, yeah, we can update our policies. And yeah, there's a bunch of idiots out there that yell louder than the others. But the vast majority of people, many of whom got arrested, were not participating in anything like that. And I'm sure the same holds true for Stony Brook, where a lot of people were unjustly arrested just for demonstrating. That should never be something. And, you know, Nassau County, you can get arrested. You can get arrested for a lot of different things. If you're wearing a mask at a demonstration, you can get arrested for that. It's unheard of. And you might ask, why wear a mask? First of all, it's part of Palestinian headdress. That's one thing. But another reason is that many people find themselves being doxxed as a result. And having these people follow them around, going to their homes, going to their places of employment, intimidating them because they dared show up and criticize Israel. Yeah, that's what happens. And that's why wearing a mask is sometimes necessary, and it's been done at many other demonstrations in the past. And hey, you'll even see cops wearing masks. Why? Because they don't want to be identified. They don't want to have idiots following them around and threatening their lives. We just had Trump speaking at Nassau Coliseum last week. We had Modi speaking there on Sunday. It's like Fascist Central now. You know? I don't know what's going on in Long Island, but it's really distressing. And we need to fight it. We need to stand up to it. The bloodshed I promised to get to, now taking place in Lebanon. Yeah, in response to Israel blowing up a whole bunch of people with pagers last week, they wound up bombing a whole lot of residential communities. Yeah, they responded to themselves. I'm sorry if that was unclear. they blew up a bunch of pagers, and they're getting widespread praise in the press for how clever they were in figuring out how to get explosives into all the pagers that were being used, allegedly by a terrorist organization, but a terrorist organization that lives amongst the people and has family, many of whom were also wounded and affected badly. But after that, as if that wasn't enough, then they started bombing the crap out of various neighborhoods. They sent warnings. They said, hey, you have 2 hours to get out of here because Hezbollah has forced us to bomb your homes. Now, if somebody contacted you right now and said, you've got 2 hours to leave, how easy would that be? I mean, we all have cars here, right? So it shouldn't be that hard, but it would be. It would be a pain in the ass. Where do you go? Where do you stay? What about the people around you? In the case in Lebanon, many people probably didn't have an easy means to suddenly go somewhere else. And how do they know they're even safe there? Certainly hasn't proven true in Gaza. So you get this warning, you have 2 hours, and then your house blows up. And this is considered acceptable. This is something you know, I heard it on CNN today. I think it was Jake Tapper said it. How far should Israel go in punishing Hezbollah? Not who's going to stop Israel from murdering over 500 people in one day. No, we accept that because that's collateral damage. Well, let me ask you, if there are some bad people and you know where they are and they're in the middle of a city and you have one chance to blow them up with a missile, do you take that chance? The correct answer is yes, at least according to what I hear in the media, according to what I'm seeing in the Mideast. So put that house in the United States. Put that house in Israel. Is it still okay? Because, you know, if you follow someone's lead and act like them, there are going to be a lot of missiles exploding and killing a lot of innocent people for the greater good, supposedly, to blow up bad people. It just points to these people are not the same as those people. These people don't have as much value. You say Hamas has infiltrated Tel Aviv? Okay, you'll blow up Tel Aviv then. You have to, right? How else are you going to get them out? No, you wouldn't do that. That's barbaric. Gaza City, go for it. No big deal. The people there asked for it. It's disgusting. It's really disgusting. And if you see anything anti-Semitic in any of this, you let me know. I'd love to hear about it. OTW@2600.com. What else we got going on? This brings us back to how we started. Apparently, you know, one of the things Twitter has that actually does some good is it labels when a particular claim is disputed. If somebody says something that's a complete lie, especially if it's somebody like Trump. But in this country of ours, it turns out that doing that makes people believe it more. Yeah, the disputed tags are meant to alert a reader to false / misinformation. So it's pretty shocking, they're saying, to find that they may have the opposite effect. Participants were shown 4 tweets from Donald Trump that made false claims about election fraud and told to rank them from 1 to 7 based on their truthfulness. A control group saw the tweets without disputed tags. The experimental group viewed them with the label. Before and after seeing the tweets, the subjects were also asked to rank their views on election fraud overall. And the study found that Trump voters who were initially skeptical about claims of widespread fraud were more likely to rate lies as true when a disputed label appeared next to Trump's tweets. So basically, fact checkers are the enemy. If you say something is a lie, well then you're the problem because you're saying that about somebody that they like. So you must be lying because they can't possibly be lying. That is what a cult is. Well, you cannot accept criticism of the leader. It's a very, very dangerous situation. And we're in the home stretch. These people could be in charge in a couple of months. Well, that's it. I'm out of stories, Kyle. I have 2 minutes to fill, and I can just say that I'm dismayed by it all. I was hopeful, but, you know, I made the mistake of watching the news and listening to what people are saying and reading polls and things like that. And I wonder, you know, I have strong reservations about what direction we're heading in.
Reservations?
Yeah. What, you want to claim reservations somewhere? Because we might have to do that.
I mean, that's, I guess, what everyone is bracing for, because there's going to be, I think, consequences. You know, elections have consequences. It's the way it's always characterized. And there will life will go on. There will be much needed work in either case, and it's up to people to chart the course and share amongst their fellow citizens what the leadership for our country really is, and this is how we do it. You know, the voter is on deck, and they got to take a swing at this.
Please, people, take a swing. Take as many swings as you need to. Talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, talk to your relatives, and talk to us as well, otw@2600.com. Hopefully we'll be more cheerful in the future. Good night.